How's everybody feeling this afternoon? Woo! Energy. I like that. Now, just keep in mind, those of you in back, I can't hear your questions as loud, so you need to stand up and shout them if you have a question. But please do raise your hand first for the courtesy of others. Now, I'm going to put a lot of slides up where people are going to be tempted to take pictures with their cell phones, an annoying practice that irritates the person behind you. So here's my deal. My email is very simple, bill@brownchick.com. Okay, bill@brownchick.com. Send me a receipt of $25 or more to the Tunnel to Towers Foundation or any military thing. Both my kids are in military. And I will send you a copy of my PowerPoint for free. Is that fair?
Yeah.
All right, so we agree? No iPad picture taking. I want you to get the big picture, not the small little details, all right? I want you to get the concepts. So you get sidetracked when you're taking pictures of everything on the screen because you can't write it fast enough, all right? So if you want a PowerPoint, simple donation. Fair enough?
Yeah.
We in agreement?
Yep.
This isn't TV. I could see you. You could participate back and forth, you know. There's actually a person standing up here. Well, how many people have learned some real estate ideas this weekend so far to make money? Okay, all right, that's great. Well, real estate is kind of like football. You got offense, and then you got defense. It's not just about what you make, it's what you keep. That's right. So we're going to be talking about defensive strategies for the next hour and a half. Now, those of you who know football, you know the answer to this, but those of you who don't, football teams have two teams within the team. They have an offensive team, they have a defensive team, depending on which side they're on at that part in the game. Does the offensive team learn defense? Yeah, they should. Why? In case there's a fumble, right? What if the offensive team, after a fumble, said, well, that's not my job, and walked off? That doesn't work. You got to learn defense when you're playing offense, because sometimes things will happen, like a fumble in your business, the financial equivalent. So we have to learn defensive strategies, because some of the legal facts of life, juries award over $50 billion annually, and $10 billion of that is just against Donald Trump. I had to throw it down. And then he negotiates them down to two, and he pays them. Your chances of being hospitalized in life are 1 in 7. Your chances of being sued are 1 in 3. So if you're an investor, entrepreneur, master of the universe, how many people are fit in that category? Investor, entrepreneur, or master of the universe, you're going to get sued a lot more times than that. It's just, I mean, Donald Trump's been sued like 2,200 times. I remember reading that in the New York Times. What they didn't say is he settled or won 92% of them. So he gets himself into trouble, but he manages to set it up. You know, when you've got teams and teams of lawyers representing you, like, you know, when you're a multi-billionaire, that's great. But most of us can't afford that. Can't afford to be paying lawyers all the time every time someone has a claim against us. So we want to set ourselves up in a way that we don't have to fork out money to do that. Top liability professions, landlords and small business entrepreneurs. How many people fit in one of those two categories? Almost everybody. Who's never going to raise their hand no matter what question I ask? Okay. The average cost of defending a bunk lawsuit, I mean, like, you're served with papers, and it's either dismissed or settled, $7,500. That stinks that you got to pay. It's like extortion money, right? It's like extortion money. Like, I was explaining to someone the other day, you know, about this, you know, the Georgia lawsuit where they're trying to, you know, find Trump criminal for the election thing. I don't know. I don't remember what it's about. But there's like 15 co-defendants in that trial, and like 3 or 4 of them took plea bargains. And people go, oh, they must have been guilty. No, people will take plea bargains because they don't want to sell their home and give up all their money to be right. So if someone charges you with a big crime or a big lawsuit and you could settle it for little and not have to sell everything you want to pay lawyers' fees just to be proven innocent, Do people do that? Yeah, absolutely. So the 7,500 is a cheap thing. If you go all the way, 100 grand, 150, depending on how many defendants there are. So when you get sued in a multi-defendant lawsuit, every time your lawyer writes a letter, he's got to send it to six other lawyers. So it's six times the fees. That's what makes it bad. So people do settle to get out of, you know, it's cheaper, you know, to get emotionally, it's cheaper, but it's still money out of your pocket. So even if you win, you lose. So you settle, you lose. You go all the way to trial and win, you still lose because you have to pay your lawyer. You don't make money in court. Stay out of court. I make money in court. You don't make money in court. You want to do whatever you can to stay out of court and stay out of trouble. Now, a little bit about me. I've been an attorney, as they announced, for 32 years, since 1991 I was admitted to practice. I've been a real estate investor for 30 years, so it only took me 2 years to figure out that working by the hour sucks. Because even though, I mean, well, I don't care if you make 20 or I make 500 an hour, what happens when you run out of hours? You run out of money, right? So I realized when I first got out of law school, I'm like, this is a license to steal. This is great. I can make so many hundreds of dollars an hour, so many days a week. And then after doing it for a couple of years, I go, you know, I got to work a long time to really, because when you make more money, you spend more money. Your lifestyle goes up until you have passive income that comes in and works for you when you're not working. That's the difference. Now, I still practice law because I like what I do. I do three things. I do real estate, and it's usually the kind of deals that nobody else will do or don't know how to do. Number two, I do asset protection, entity setup, estate planning for clients. And number three, I set up self-directed retirement plans for people to invest in things like real estate. So I'm not a jack of all trades like a lot of lawyers are, and a master of none. I am a master of three. And I've been doing it for 32 years, and I'm exceedingly good at what I do, and that's why I get $500 an hour. And I mean, frankly, I hate that. Getting on a Zoom with someone by the hour is the worst thing in the world. I hate to do, because I'm not leveraging my time. Speaking to you, I'm leveraging and speaking to multiple people. Better use of my time, right? Or when I buy real estate that is leveraged and makes me money on my money so I don't have to work for it. So, you know, I still do practice law. I do speaking and I write books. And I have my property investments that take quite a bit of time as well. So I have three different things, and as long as I'm having fun, which I am, I'll keep doing it. I can't imagine retiring like with a fishing pole. How many people think they're going to keep working until God takes them? Yeah, that's the way it is. As an entrepreneur, your mind's always, you want to be productive, you know, you want to be doing stuff. So I've appeared on dozens of major media, TV shows, radio, newspaper, magazines, so forth. I've written six best-selling books. Some of you may have read one or more of my books. How many people have read one of my books? Oh, yeah, a few of you did. Okay. I've been appeared on CNBC, Fox, ABC, NBC. Some of those a few pounds ago, obviously. But so what we're going to cover today is how to protect yourself, your business, and your family from lawsuits, liability, taxes, and other financial pitfalls. How to become legally judgment-proof. Now, that sounds really unusual for some people to say, how do I become judgment-proof? Well, if you're broke, that's easy. No one's going to want to sue you. But it's possible to have a lot of wealth and people can't get to it, right? So who comes to mind has a huge multi-million dollar judgment that they can't collect? Very famous defendant. OJ, right? OJ. Not exactly our model of citizen we want to go after, but legally speaking, he does have assets. So in the state of Florida, how many people are from Florida here? Any Floridas? You have an unlimited homestead exemption. That means someone with a judgment can't take your home, even if it's worth $5 million. That's the law in Florida. South Dakota and Texas and a couple other states have that too. He has a pension from the NFL. Under federal law, creditors can't take your pension money. So there are legal loopholes within the law that prevent creditors from getting at stuff, and that's what I mean by being judgment-proof. If someone does sue you, the first goal is don't get sued. We'll spend a lot of time on that. The second one is don't be held liable. We'll work on that too. But the third part is, if someone does get a court judgment, what can they get? Does that make sense? And sometimes jumping right to the bottom line and explaining to the lawyers from the other side, this is how I'm set up, your judgment will be worthless. You could settle for 5 cents on the dollar. Does that make sense? The way you set yourself up. Okay? What?
Did we lose video?
No, there is. I'm just blanking it because I don't like this. Next, we're going to choose how to choose the right entities for your real estate business, or if you're in another, how many people are in another business besides real estate too? Okay, because a lot of this will apply to that as well. And how to gain financial privacy. It's scary, you know, those websites like PeopleFinder, how much information you could find out about your neighbors, yourself, your email addresses. How many people are concerned about their financial privacy? Good. We're talking about that. And most of all, how to get started right now. And as a result of what you learned today, I encourage you to take action right away. The problem is with this stuff is people hear it and they'll say, that was really interesting. And then they'll say, I'll get started tomorrow or next week or after this is done or after that happens. Well, let me tell you a story about a client of mine. Owned an apartment building in South Florida in West Palm Beach, not the better area of Palm Beach. Kind of a bad neighborhood next to the railroad tracks and on the wrong side of them. Bought it in his own name. Now, a lot of times for financing purposes, you know, certain lenders won't lend to an LLC. You got to buy it in your own name, and then you could transfer it into an LLC or something. So he did that and said, all right, I'll get to that next week. And next week became next month, and next month became 6 months. And he finally put it into an LLC. 4 years later, sold it for a tidy profit. A week after closing, gets a lawyer letter. My client had a baby that pushed on a screen that was not secured and fell out of the window and cracked her skull on the sidewalk. Now, here's the thing. Does anyone here not know what the meaning of the word statute of limitations is? Does anyone not know what that means? That's the time someone can sue you, and beyond that, you can't sue for that claim. When you're a minor, like a baby, they pause it till they're 18 plus the statute of limitations, right? So if the statute of limitations for suing for, would in this case be negligence, is 3 years, they'd have 18, well, the baby, so 17 plus 3, 20 years to sue. In this particular case, they started suit after, like, 4.5 years after it happened. Now, the case was settled. There was insurance, thankfully. But there was a big question of whether insurance was going to cover it or not. And the client lost a lot of sleep over this because the prospect of, you know, a baby falling out of the window and cracking their skull is a pretty big jury claim. Agreed? And you're not going to get a jury of your peers. You think you're going to get a jury of landlords? You're going to get a jury full of what? Tenants. And they're very empathetic to another tenant. You know who that client was? Me. I bought an apartment building in Florida, and I said, I'll get to it next week. I'll get to it next month. And after 6 months, I transferred it into an entity. But the alleged event happened when? During the first 6 months when I owned it in my own name. And what really kept me up at night, I had a property manager down there. I don't live in Florida. I live in Colorado. In fact, I never saw the building before I bought it. I owned it for years, then went and visited it, and then had nightmares. I'm a slumlord. I shouldn't have looked at it. I've owned lots of buildings I bought and never saw and sold. That's the best way, because when you see it, then you go, oh, man, I own that. Just look at the paper, you know, the money, the checks that come in, the financial statements. You don't have to look at a property. Anyway, I had a point. I think I had a senior moment. What was I talking about? Oh, yeah, the LLC. So it happened during the first 6 months, and what kept me up at night was, the first thing I did is call my property manager and go, did you know about this? How did I not know about this? It was only a 10-unit building. He said, no. And I knew he was lying. Because there was a police report, you know, an ambulance report. There was an admission thing to the hospital. It happened. How did he not know about this? Because if he did, what does that mean? It's imputed to my knowledge. And here's the challenge. When you don't report a timely claim of an incident, even if you're not being sued, you got to report the incident to your insurance company. If you don't and you get sued later, guess what? No coverage. Not even for the lawyer fees. That kept me up at night. Because if it went to trial and it found out that he knew, that means I knew, that means out of pocket. It was a confidential settlement, but it was a pretty big number. I paid a $10,000 deductible on my insurance, and I was happy as a pig writing that out. Because it could have been a big sum of money. So here's my lesson. Don't wait. Because if you wait until you get sued, it doesn't work. None of this works. It's like jumping out of an airplane and go, whoops, I forgot a parachute. This is all preventative. It's like insurance. It's all preventative. If you wait until something goes wrong or you're about to default on something, nothing I'm going to describe to you is going to work. You have to do it while things are good. Okay? And if you're just starting, how many people are just starting in real estate, just building up? So when you build a house, what do you build it on? What is a foundation made of? Concrete. What if you built a house on plywood? Eventually it's going to rot out, right? And collapse. Same thing with your business. Build your business from the ground up with the entities that are a concrete foundation so it'll stand up when the storm comes. Does that make sense? And plus you'll feel more confident making offers that if it blows up, well, at least I know that I have some protection to do this. Because a lot of people will do deals. I'll do them in my own name, a few, and then I'll form an entity. Well, the statute of limitations, the time you can get sued, is 6 years on a contract in most states. So you can do a deal now, form an LLC next week, and get sued 6 years later for the contract you did in your own name. Don't want to do that. Don't want to do that. Okay? And then a lot of people think like, well, it won't happen to me. Like an ostrich, they'll put their head in the sand and say, I treat my tenants like family. I've heard that before. Our friends. They're not your friends. They're not your family. And your family will turn on you too when it comes to money. And so will your friends. At least the ones that aren't really your friends. People will be your best friend. But when things go wrong, there's a lawyer who will convince them otherwise. Does that make sense? So just because you treat people nice, your customers, your employees, your tenants, your contractors, doesn't mean that it's always going to be that way. That just don't be naive about it. Protect yourself. And employers and landlords are very easy targets. Why do you think lawyers love suing employers and landlords? They have money, potentially. They have a business, presumably successful. They have real estate, which might have equity. And right, not popular opinion, you know, so when you go into court, who makes up the jury pool? Tenants and employees. Not your peers. Not other landlords and entrepreneurs. So when you go to court, everybody hates their boss. Everybody hates their landlord. Payback time. You're not going to get a fair trial. Trust me. Stay out of court as much as you can. And I'm going to talk about ways to avoid that and then avoid liability. And then even if the jury does give it to you, you could be like, well, I hate to say be like OJ, because he's not a good role model. But at least in the legal sense, use the law in your favor to protect yourself. Now, some people go, well, that's unethical. If you did something wrong, you should pay it. Well, sometimes it's something simple, like in 2009 or 10, when everybody was defaulting on loans left and right, and they had a choice of paying Citibank or Wells Fargo or feeding their family. I hope that never happens to any of you. God forbid. But would you like the opportunity to have a choice? Raise your hand. So like four of you? The rest of you would just pay Bank of America instead of feeding your family? Of course you want that. Of course you want the choice. Now, a lot of people think, well, I'll just get lots of insurance. And insurance is a good thing because they pay for your free lawyer. And since most cases are settled, you know, the big fee, the lawyer fee gets paid too. Plus the settlement, unless they don't cover it. My first job out of law school was working for an insurance company. And the first thing they did when a customer submitted a claim, they would give me the file with the claim sheet and a copy of the insurance policy, and my job was to research how the insurance company could screw the insured and not pay the claim. That was my job. I felt really bad doing that. How many people have been screwed by an insurance company before? Lots of people, right? You know, like when they, I had a hail, we have a lot of hailstorms where I live in Colorado, and you know, we had a pretty expensive roof, you know, with the clay synthetic tile roofs, they're very expensive, and window damage and the seals broke and we got water inside and some of our hardwood floors warped. The insurance company offered us $7,000. By the time we were done, we got $83,000. So whatever they're authorized to give you, they'll offer you like 10% up front and most people take it. That's really scummy, don't you think? They don't tell you what you get. They'll try to settle it with you for less than they're authorized to give. No matter what an insurance company offers, you held out. Because I guarantee it's less than half what they'll really give you. But insurance company, you know, it's like wearing your gown when you go to the doctor and you go, this isn't so bad in the front mirror, but the mirror behind you, you realize what's hanging out the back, your assets. Insurance companies are really good at two things, collecting premiums and denying claims. So while you should have lots of insurance, how many people have an umbrella policy? That's good, because most people, what they do is, before they buy a house, catch me if I'm wrong, but you wait till about 3 days before closing, and you call your insurance agent and say, I'm buying a property, I forgot. How much is the policy? I need a binder. So what are they going to try to quote you? A competitive rate. And they'll give you a standard policy. Now, what's the standard liability coverage policy for a single family home? You guys have no idea, do you? You have no idea what you have in your homes. First assignment tonight, go check. It's usually about $250, $300. That's not enough. That's like a scar on someone's head from falling on the sidewalk. They get seriously injured, it's going to be a lot more than that. In fact, the average jury verdict in a property liability case is $1.2 million. So if you have $300 in coverage and someone gets a judgment against you for $1.2, who's forking out the $900? You are. So you have to have enough coverage. Now, what an umbrella does, umbrellas are good because they're cheap. Let's say you had $300 on your rental, $500 on your home, $500 on your car. It'll cover the top of that up to $1 million or $2 million. So if the first policy gets exhausted, it covers the rest. Now people go, oh, I have an umbrella. Umbrella means like coverage. It doesn't give you more coverage than any other policy. It just gives you more money coverage. So if the primary claim wasn't covered by the primary policy, neither does the umbrella. So don't be fooled into thinking an umbrella, it gives you all the coverage that you need. Because insurance doesn't cover a lot of things. Some of them include intentional acts. So anything you or your employees or your contractors do intentionally, never covered by insurance. Divorce. That's not covered by insurance. I wish they did have divorce insurance. Wouldn't that be great? Especially in this county, you got a 57% divorce rate. You know that? Do you know that 82% of statistics are made up right on the spot? I have no idea what the divorce rate is in this county, to be honest. But I assume it's around 50%, right? Mold and lead claims, usually not covered. Bankruptcy, IRS audits. Contractual disputes, so you bought a house from someone in foreclosure and they thank you profusely for it, and then you sold it and made a profit and their lawyer convinced them that you're a shark. That's not covered by insurance at all. What about failure to report claims? That's the biggie. So as I mentioned earlier, whenever there's an incident that might lead later to a claim, you have a duty to report. What if you don't report? You don't get coverage. Now, people don't usually report small incidences. Why? They don't want their rates to go up in the future. But if you don't report it, I had a client recently, has a fourplex. Tenant pulled out the fridge to clean behind it, snapped the water line for the ice maker. And the kid comes home, teenage kid comes home later on, a few hours later, water all over the kitchen floor, slips and breaks his leg. Doesn't even sound like my client's fault, does it? No. But what if they did sue? What's it going to cost them to defend that lawsuit? A lot of money, okay? So he calls his insurance company when he gets a lawyer letter 7 months later. The insurance company says, you didn't report that. No lawyer coverage. So it's a bunk lawsuit, but if you have to pay your lawyer to get out, do you really win when you win? No, you lose, because it costs money to defend a lawsuit, even if you're the one in the right. It's just, unfortunately, that's the way our justice system works, okay? So have lots of insurance. That's number one. Don't get me wrong. Some people say don't carry insurance because it's a magnet for lawsuits. I totally disagree with that, because it gives you a lawyer for free to defend claims that most of them get settled. You understand? So if you have to pay that out of pocket and you self-insure, it's not a good idea. It's a necessary evil, but you gotta carry insurance. The second layer of insurance is my bulletproof asset protection system, which I'm gonna show you how to get real coverage if your primary or your claim's just not covered by the insurance policy. Does that make sense? Are you with me? Is this the English-speaking group, or is that next door? Comprende? See. So write down with your pen and paper, there are four steps to success. Number one, you want to appear broke. Now, some of you have mastered that really well. No, I'm just kidding. Just joshing you. I mean, on paper. If you don't look like you're worth anything, or you look highly leveraged, you'll dissuade litigation. It's a simple concept, right? If you don't look like you are suing, people won't sue you. It's as simple as that. Number two, we want to create a liability shield. So if you do get sued, who's on the hook? You or some corporate entity in front of you? So certain assets, by their very nature, are going to cause a liability, i.e. real estate, employees, automobiles, trucks, things like that. Other assets don't create a liability. Like if you own stock in Google, are you going to get sued if Google gets sued? No. You're not likely to get sued just for owning Google stock. Does that make sense? That shouldn't be in the same basket, for example, because we want to segregate assets as the real estate. You follow? So we want to segregate assets into their relative risk to keep one from poisoning the other. And finally, become judgment proof. So if everything goes to hell, well, we got OJ protection. We're going to use legal loopholes to prevent it. And the great thing about that is sometimes we're going to do it like the appear broke, where they can't figure anything out, so they don't know where to start. And other times I've sat across the table with lawyers and said, even if you get through all this, this is the bottom line, I'm judgment proof. And they settle for 4 cents on the dollar. Is that good? Beats 96% more. I'd rather pay nothing, but if I have to defend it with a lawyer, it's better off, it's cheaper. Don't take it personally. See, people take it personally, like they chase after tenants for money owed, like after they evict them, or I don't know about you, but how many people pay tenants to leave? Good, smart. Even if they owe you money, pay them to leave. No, they owe me money. As Tony Soprano said, it ain't personal, it's just business. If it's cheaper to pay them to leave, you pay them to leave. If it's cheaper to settle than pay lawyer fees, you settle. It's not the principle, it's the money. We're in a profit business, right? Are we in a profit business?
Yes.
Okay, hopefully. And so the important thing again is don't wait. If all you say after you hear my presentation is, that's interesting, I'll do it when, you just never know. when something's going to come bite you in your tuchus. So, step one, appear broke. How many people own real estate assets in their own name, in their own personal name? Not anymore. Not after you hear what I have to say. It's like having a target painted on your back. Real estate is so easy to find. It's public record. Especially rental properties. That's like crazy. First of all, they know who the landlord is. They can look it up, right? You own the property. Would you rather deal with your tenants as the greedy landlord? Or would you rather say, well, it's owned in this anonymous stack of things we've set up, and I just work here. I'm the property manager. If it was up to me, dude, I wouldn't even charge you rent, but I have to answer to them. Now, isn't that a better way to communicate with your tenants? Rather than greedy landlording, you know? Because that's a lot of people think that landlords were all wealthy. And, you know, in my state of Colorado, they passed like 11 different anti-landlord legislations. It's like crazy. They think we're monopoly men, right? 66% of landlords are us. We own a handful or a dozen properties, and this is our retirement, right? They think we can just eat, like during COVID, you know, no rent. They tried to cancel rent in the city of Denver. You don't owe anything. The governor vetoed it. So that's ridiculous. You can't do that. But the mentality is, and I got interviewed like 11 times by the local news by all these things, and the news reporters were all like, well, what's unfair about this? What's unfair? What do you mean what's unfair? I got to pay my mortgage, my taxes, my insurance, the maintenance, and this guy just gets to live for free? How does that work out? Maybe in Soviet Union that's the way they do it, but this is America, Jack. We make money.
That's why my family.
The golden rule of law. He who has the gold gets sued. That's the golden rule of law. That's why we want to appear like we don't have any gold. There's nothing worth going after. Now, let's say Tracy is a tenant in Janet's apartment building, and Tracy thinks she has some sort of claim. Now, normally, what we want to figure out is what kind of insurance does Janet have, because that's the pot of gold to go after usually. She goes to the lawyer. I'm the lawyer. I say, well, I don't know if insurance would cover this claim, but if you pay me $10,000 an hour, $10,000 as an initial retainer against my hourly litigation rate of $500, it sounds like we've got a good case, no guarantees, but we're going to sue her and get her. See you in trial in about 2 years and pay your bill every month. How does that sound, Tracy? That doesn't sound too good, right? So she feels rejected, despair. So she's driving down the highway and she sees a billboard that looks like this. Has someone injured you? Car accident? Train wreck? Dog bite? Mosquito bite? Call 1-800-LET'S-SUE. It's getting embarrassing to admit I'm a lawyer, I have to say. From now on, I'm going to tell people I'm a politician. So she goes down to the law offices of Dewey, Cheatham, and Howe. So I'll be Mr. Dewey. This is the way it works. You don't pay anything up front. You don't pay any costs. Our firm will take the case, and we'll sue Janet, and whatever we win and collect, we'll take a third of. And you don't have to pay anything out of your pocket. If we lose, we don't collect anything. It doesn't cost you a dime. How does that sound? Much better, right? It's like going to Vegas with someone else's money. She has nothing to lose. So let's say I sue Janet and I get a $3 million jury verdict. How much is my fee? $1 million. You sure about that? A third, I said. A third. Well, sometimes attorneys do a third plus expenses, but I'm a nice ambulance chaser. I only take a third. $3 million. You sure about that? Anyone else have a different number? What? Say again?
No, it's a million.
You sure it's a million?
It's whatever, it's a third of whatever you can get when you're done.
Right? Ah. It's a third of what? What I collect. Not what I win. So if I got a jury verdict for $3 million, I could use that as toilet paper. If the person I'm suing, Janet, doesn't have anything I get to, and she has judgment proof. You understand? Lawyers may be a lot of things, but they're not stupid. Okay? They know they work on a for-profit model, and they don't take cases, not that they can win, but they can make money on. Right? Like suing McDonald's for the coffee between your legs thing. Doesn't matter if there's any liability, it's McDonald's you're suing. Right? If there's a big enough deep pocket, we'll come up with a theory of liability. You can have a great case, but if you can't collect, no one's taking a case on what we call a contingency. It'll be back to $10,000 down, $500 an hour. You understand? In our football analogy, we want to deprive the other guy of his quarterback. Right? If they have no quarterback, you take the ball and go home. You win. You understand? It's a game we're playing. And the only way to win that game is deprive the other party of his or her quarterback. That's Dewey, Cheatham, and Howe would be the quarterback. Okay? So, okay. It's not covered by insurance. But let's say I did a little bit of research and I looked up public record and, well, the property you're in is owned by Janet and all these other properties are owned by Janet, totally exposed. Okay? Because even if she puts it in an LLC, what can I do to find the other ones? Search the name of the LLC in the public records and I'll find the other ones. Now, how many people set up an LLC for their properties? And you probably formed it yourself, right? And you put your name all over the public record with your home address. Does that allow Janet to say, hey, I just work here? No. It's Janet's LLC. Okay? So when I set up stuff for clients, I set it up with complete anonymity to the point where it's tough opening a bank account because the bank teller's like, wait a minute, you're not anywhere on this. So I have to write a letter to the bank explaining, I'm just the person who filed it. I'm the registered agent, but they really own it, which is good. So there's no public record trail of you. Now, if you've already set that up like that, I'm very sorry. There's nothing you can really do to change the public record because it is what it is. But there are some ways to muddy that up a little bit, as we will discover. Now, putting it in an LLC doesn't give you any anonymity, right? Because we're trying to, at this point, just to avoid litigation in the first place. And there's no insurance, but this LLC I'm suing owns four properties. That might be a deep enough pocket for me to take the case on behalf of Tracy. Do you understand? So we're not discouraging the quarterback, so to speak. All right? So the way I suggest, this is the way I've been doing it for many, many years, and a lot of my clients do it this way, is to put properties in separate trusts. How many people use land trusts? A lot of you do. Good. Good. For those of you who don't, a land trust would be one per property. Now, a land trust is not like an LLC you file with the state. It doesn't have a tax ID. It doesn't need a bank account. It doesn't have minutes of meetings. It's not a corporation or an LLC. What is a trust? It's an agreement. It's an agreement. It's a contract between the person who's in charge. We call that person the trustee, and then the person who has the beneficial ownership is the beneficiary. You follow? What the great thing about using trusts is, if you put properties, first of all, if you put a property in a trust name and Tracy was injured on property land trust number one, we look up the owner, there's no info because trust agreements are not recorded in the public records. Second of all, how many people have a corporation or LLC? When you formed it, you have to have what's called a registered agent. Remember? That's the person or company that someone can serve legal papers on, and it's got to be a physical address in this state or whatever state you formed in. If that's you, not fun. The family barbecue, a sheriff comes up, reflective glasses, serving a summons on you in front of your friends and family. Not too bright. There are companies that do that job for you for like $50, $60 a year. So that's That's good information right there. But also, if you search the name of Land Trust 1, you don't come up with any other properties because everyone's a separate name trust. And we do it something simple like 221 Oak Street Trust. Now, who's the trustee? Not you. Has anyone ever done an estate planning living trust before? Right, so you set it up and the attorney who does estate planning probably says, well, we'll put all your properties in the living trust. Well, that avoids probate. It does what it does, but if all your properties are in the Bill Bronchek Living Trust, is there any doubt as to who really owns those properties? As opposed to 223 Main Street. The trustee would be a friend, relative, maybe a spouse or someone under their maiden name who's the trustee not connected to you. And it doesn't need a physical address in the state. It could be a P.O. box in Hawaii or Alaska or Guam. It doesn't matter. You know what they have now? Now, a lot of people use UPS stores for that, and they're expensive. It's like $40 a month. They have virtual P.O. boxes. Is anyone using those? One person, yeah. So it's like $9 a month. You can get a virtual P.O. box anywhere in the United States, and they scan mail and forward it to you. Isn't that great? So your trustee could be someone with a different last name at a P.O. box in Alaska. You know how tough it's going to be for the law firm of Dewey, Cheatham & Howe to get any information out of that trustee? Because the trust agreement says, trustee shall not disclose the true owner of this trust, except under court order. But Dewey is not going to file a lawsuit to get a court order until he knows whether or not the lawsuit's worthwhile. You understand that there's you can't get a subpoena on someone without a court order or a lawsuit started first. So we're just trying to avoid litigation. And everyone see how effective that could be just to muddy things up to make it very, if you know, you probably hearing it saying this is a little complicated. Imagine the poor schmuck of an attorney who's suing on behalf of Tracy trying to figure out what kind of trust is this? Who's the beneficiary? There's nothing I can look up. And it's very simple. Doesn't have an annual fee. Doesn't have a bank account. Very simple. Yes. Name of the trust. You can't get that information you can't call up the utility company and say, I want the name of every trust in this county. First of all, there'll probably be thousands of them, hundreds of them at least.
Well, you ask for the address.
Okay. Yeah, it's such and such trust is on the bill. Well, if it's a tenant, if it's a water bill, it might be in the landlord's name, but otherwise it would be in the tenant's name. Right? And you can't, that's not public info. You'd have to get a subpoena off that company, and you have to start a lawsuit in the first place to have subpoena power. You understand? So we're just trying to avoid the lawsuit, because a lot of people don't know this, but personal injury attorneys of those type, or we call them ambulance chasers, once you file the lawsuit, you can't quit on behalf of the client unless you get the court's permission. So attorneys like that are very careful about filing lawsuits when they don't know any information, sort of rolling the dice. You know, if you're in the investigative stage, it's very tough to get that information. Does that make sense? Now, the tax records, where the tax bill's sending, that's public info. And it's going to say such and such. In my case, I put my property manager's name and address down for the mailing notices for that. Or I put the trustee's name or the trust name at the virtual P.O. box. Is there a way to cross-reference that? I don't think so. I've never seen a database in the public county tax records where you could search mailing address, just name. Does that make sense? Yeah. Well, the trust agreement says the trustee can only do what the beneficiary tells them to do. They don't have authority to make decisions like a regular trust does. So they can only do what you tell them to do. If you don't like him, you fire him. If they die, we got a successor named already in the trust agreement. Does that make sense? Yeah. The owner would be the trust. The property manager would be your property manager if you hire one, or if you have a what I used to do before I had a property manager is I had an S-Corp that was my property management company. I don't care who knows I own that. I'm the property manager. That's what I'm telling the tenants. So that company is registered, and the trust is registered as the owner. Yep. Make sense? We have rental registrations where I am, too. That's all they ask for. Yeah. The manager. So you set up a management company. You set up a management company to collect. First of all, you don't want bank accounts for the trusts. You have a property management company you set up that is collecting rents for all the trusts and then distributes the money to the real owner, which we'll get to in a minute. One more question.
Can you layer trust?
Yeah, you could say, for example, this new government nonsense where they're collecting the names of owners of entities. You heard about this?
Yeah.
It goes into effect next year. And first of all, the IRS already has this info. It's not public. And neither will this new database be public. But what if you listed the owner of your LLC as a trust? Because there's another kind of a trust similar to this called a personal property trust. It's the same concept, but for non-real estate. So if you own a note or a mortgage deed of trust on a property or an RV or a car or something like that that's not real estate, it's personal property, bank accounts, you could do them in the name of a personal property trust and have anonymity there. And by the way, this whole new rule, they didn't put in trusts. They put corporate entities. So if you own the property in a trust, who cares? They don't know who the beneficiary is. They're not asking for that information. So that's another reason why you should be using trust, because there's no public. Plus that database, I think people worry too much about it. That public database, it's not a public database, it's a government database. I'm sure it can be hacked, I know. But it's like the IRS. They know, but the public generally doesn't know. Does that make sense? It's just an inconvenience, all right? So if we have every property in a separate trust, much harder for Dewey to find info, less likely he's going to take the case. Not impossible. Because if he sues the trust, then he can ask for in discovery or deposition who owns the trust. But that defeats the whole point, which was to avoid getting sued in the first place. All right? When we peel back that layer, they're not going to be happy because they're going to find something else we'll talk about in a moment. So each property in a separate trust, 6 pieces of paper and a notary stamp, about 4 blanks to fill in. It's easier than filling out a fishing license, I'm telling you. It's real easy. It's not as hard as programming a microwave clock. I mean, it's not as hard as that. It's easier than that. All right? So you might think I'm being paranoid, but who's watching you? The government? Your the media, your ex-spouse, attorneys. In my jurisdiction where I own most of my properties, if you get more than two, has anyone ever gotten a code violation notice on their property? Yeah, right? So as a landlord in the city I'm in, if you get more than 2 notices as a landlord in 6 months, you got to go in front of a judge. And they could fine you, throw you in jail. I've seen that happen. I've seen people get thrown in jail for violating code and they didn't fix it in time. They fixed it, but not in time. So the judge threw him in jail. Unbelievable. So if I have one LLC that owns 12 properties, what's the likelihood on all 12 I'm going to get 3 notices? It's pretty good. But if I own every one in a separate trust, what's the odds that one property is going to have 3 violations in 6 months? Slim. See how effective that is? Okay? Yeah. The downside of a trust is general ignorance and stupidity of the people you deal with, like title companies, attorneys, brokers. It's just explaining it to people. That's the downside. Otherwise, it's There's no reporting obligations. There's no tax ID, no tax return, no bank account. It's just something to muddy the water, so Mr. Dewey says, this is messy. I don't want to take the case on a contingency. You understand? Plus, these reasons too. I'll get to you in a sec. So step two, we want to create a liability shield. And we're going to want to use corporate entities. So we have like corporations, LLCs. How many people have a corporation or LLC set up? You're not going to like what I'm going to have to say in about 2 minutes about that. So corporate entity will give you liability protection. So as the owner of a corporation or as the owner of an LLC, what do we call the owner of a corporation? Shareholder. What do we call the owner of an LLC? Member, okay. Who runs an LLC? Well, it can be member, but usually a manager, right? Who runs the corporation? The officers, president, secretary, and so forth. Okay, just to get those things straight. But liability protection is important. If you hire someone or one of your employees or your property manager does something wrong, do you want them suing you, the owner of the property, or the corporate entity? The corporate entity, right? Right? There's also less risk of audit if you're filing as a separate corporate tax return. Now, here's the rub. There are tax benefits as well. Is anyone here flip or do wholesales or do any kind of ordinary income? If you're doing that in a single owner LLC, single member LLC. See, LLCs don't have a tax return. The IRS never came up with one. So there are four ways you can elect to be taxed. Most people go with the default, which is disregarded. What does that mean? If you're a single owner LLC, or it could be husband and wife, single owners, you ignore the LLC for tax reporting and you report on your personal return, right? Because you're the members. People do that for convenience. Now, for rentals, it's not that bad because it's passive income. You report on your Schedule E, that's correct. But if you're doing active work, like flipping, wholesaling, brokerage, property management, that's Schedule C. What do you pay on earnings on a Schedule C besides income tax? FICA, Social Security, Medicare, 15.3%. How many people think that nanny system sucks and they'd rather keep their own money? Yeah, I don't want to pay that into that system. Neither do you. So how do you avoid it? Well, most people use an S corporation because an S corporation, the money passes through to the shareholder. You pay income tax, but you don't pay the 15.3% on that. Yeah, you got to take some, well, depends on how much you're earning. If your S corp is earning, you know, net $50,000 or less, it's going to go under the radar. But if you're making, you know, a couple hundred grand a year, you got to take some salary. But if you're making 200 grand a year net and you took 50 as salary and took the other 150 passing through, you're only paying the FICA tax on the 50, not the full 200. So as a single owner, single member LLC, you're filing Schedule C, which means you're paying self-employment tax. On top of that, your audit risk is about 400 times if you did it in an S corp. That alone should be a reason. Who likes to cheat on their taxes? Raise your hand. No. I said that wrong. You know what's the difference between tax avoidance and tax evasion? About 20 years. What I'm saying is, if you operate in the gray area, which you should, you know, you should be aggressive but have something to back it up in documentation, wouldn't you rather file a corporate return that has a much lower risk of audit than a Schedule C? You know, these 87,000 new IRS agents, they're not going after Elon Musk. They're going after contractors and small business people who are making $200,000 or $300,000 or $400,000 that file Schedule C's because they're sloppy with their paperwork, they're sloppy with their records, and they figure they're unsophisticated because they're not incorporated. So when they audit them, they get money. Work the odds. Don't have a Schedule C. That's highly audited return, and you paid the self-employment tax. Now, if you're an LLC already, how can I fix this? Well, an LLC can also be taxed as an S corporation. You don't have to form an S corp. So you can have the simplicity of an LLC with the tax treatment of an S corp. So you can convert your disregarded LLC into a S corp LLC. Now you missed the deadline this year, but for next year you have till March 15th. And now you get rid of your Schedule C and report on an S corp and lose a lot of that self-employment tax. How many people like that idea? Good. You should be real thinking about that. So it involves filing some forms with the IRS and amending your operating agreement of your LLC to allow for that. Now, if I just said the word operating agreement, most of you give me a blank look. What's that? You need an operating agreement in your company. That's like the bylaws of a corporation. LLCs have operating agreements. If you just filed with the state and paid the fee and that's all you did, shame on you. There's more to do than that, as we'll discover. So the corporate entity, like an S-corp or an LLC filing as one, is good for things like wholesales and flips that are earned income. Earned income, you want to get that off your Schedule C and onto an S-corp return. Now, what about passive income like rentals? A lot of people like to do the Schedule E, the personal return, but still the audit rate risk. If you're a single person, you don't have a choice. If you are married, you could file as a partnership. And then you get a Form K-1 that shows your net profit or loss for the year. But when the IRS audits your personal return, they don't see all the stuff you deducted on your properties. Unless they audit what? The LLC's partnership return. The odds of a small, when I say small, under $10 million a year partnership return being audited, it's the lowest audit risk, partnership returns. So simply moving it, and it's not, I know you're going to say, well, I don't want to pay a CPA $1,000 a year to file a return. A, you get lower risk of audit. But here's another thing I just found out. I just learned this the other day from a mortgage broker who was a friend of mine. Has anyone ever gone to the bank to get a loan for a property from a bank, lender, mortgage company? You know, you have existing rentals. What do they do for the income of your existing rentals? They discount it by 25%, right? If you put them in a partnership LLC and get a K-1, they don't do that. They don't do that. Because it's not yours, it belongs to now the LLC. Isn't that interesting? I just learned that the other day. How many people do not know that? That's another good reason to do it. Okay, yeah. You don't need to take a salary out of a partnership. You take distributions. Or we call them draws. Okay? So, and we'll come back to that in a little bit. Okay? So, we want to avoid the single member LLC altogether. We want to avoid single member LLCs. The exception is, actually there's two exceptions. Number one, if the sole member of that LLC is another entity, that's okay, as we'll discover. And the other exception is if you choose an S corp election. Now you're not filing Schedule C's. All right? Does that make sense? All right. Now, if you already have a corporate entity, raise your hand again if you already have a corporate entity. Recent survey of 1,000 lawyers in the business community from the American Bar Association said 95% of small businesses are operating under a false sense of security. Why? You don't follow the corporate formalities. Most people are lazy about it. That's why I don't like... I almost never do an S corporation anymore for a client. I do an LLC with a tax selection as an S corp. Why? Because LLCs aren't required to have annual meetings or bylaws. A corporation has to have an annual meeting of the shareholders and directors. How many people have not done that each year? Come on, admit it, in your corporation. Yeah, well, you could, you know, some people think that's a pain to have a meeting and document it, but In Colorado Springs, where I live, there's a hotel called the Broadmoor. Has anyone ever been there? A few people, yeah. It's a five-star, awesome hotel. That's where the secretary of my corporation calls the annual meeting of the board of directors. $650 a night. Two nights, because we have the directors meeting one day and the shareholders meeting the other day. So me, myself, and I, and my spouse, write that stuff off. Is that legit? Of course it's legit. Of course it's legit. So you can, you know, you might think it's a pain doing this paperwork, but hey, it can be fun. It creates tax deductions that are fun. All right? So a lot of people think, so the general rule I said, you want a corporate entity because it protects you from liability. But there's three exceptions to the rule of corporate liability protection where either the IRS or a court can disregard it and say you're liable as the owner of that company. It's called piercing the corporate veil. How many people have heard that expression? Piercing the corporate veil. So there's three situations. Number one, failure to keep proper records. So if you haven't been doing that, I can't, as a lawyer, advise you to go back and backdate things. But I will say it's better if it existed than it didn't exist in. And that's all I'm going to say. If you commit illegal or fraudulent activity, courts tend to bend over backwards to pierce the corporate veil. So it's not going to protect you from defrauding people and things like that. But if you're just a legitimate, you know, business owner, which you all are, well, most of you, some of you I caught in a conversation before, some questionable things you were saying, but I won't tell. Attorney-client privilege. And then here's the most important thing. The company's assets are not safe. The company's assets aren't safe. Because if you have an LLC that owns seven properties, and that's 90% of your net worth, what could you lose with a lawsuit against the LLC? All seven properties. Now, your residence is okay, your personal bank account's okay, but all the business assets are subject to execution by a creditor. What's the solution for that? We are going to segregate assets. Don't put them all in one basket. Now, what a lot of people will do, form an LLC and put it all in one LLC. But one lawsuit can lead to loss of all your properties. Now, the other end of the spectrum is putting every property in a separate LLC, which I think is way overkill. And probably a bad idea, and let me explain why. First of all, now if we're talking a fourplex, a threeplex, an apartment building, a commercial, yes, separate LLCs. But if we're talking about single family homes and condos, it's overkill. Here's the problem. It's expensive and time consuming. You have to have a separate bank account for every LLC. You have to have separate corporate meetings, minutes, records, operating agreements. You'll be so busy having meetings with yourself, you won't have time to go buy real estate. It may not work in court. You could lose everything. So you walk into court. So I'm going to walk into court representing Janet and say, Your Honor, Tracy fell on property number 6. It has $100,000 in equity, and that's all she gets. That's all that LLC owns. And the other lawyer is going to say, Judge, don't fall for it. It's all her. She owns all the companies. She has one bank account for all the money. She has no corporate records. What do you think you're leaving the judge with? Not a lot of discretion here. Do I give him everything or do I give him $100,000? And the plaintiff walks in with like a body cast, you know, a neck brace, one eye missing. You're not leaving the judge a little leeway here. So throw him a bone. Throw him a bone. Maybe 3 properties per LLC. I don't know. Depends on how much equity you have in them. I have a client that I set up in Texas that had 150 properties. Now, each one was worth about 42 cents. But now maybe I'm exaggerating. Maybe they were worth $80,000 each. So we did every 10 properties into an LLC. There's no right answer. It's just a matter of your comfort level, how much you want to spend on time and money and accounting and, you know, putting this all together. So cut them a break. It's easier to say, Judge, they get 10% of my net worth. not all of it, as opposed to 1/50th. You understand? You got to walk into court and what lawyers say with a straight-faced argument. It means you got to say it and not laugh. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Does separating the LLCs essentially exempt you from that? Like 18 years, 16 there, 15 there, over trust?
You're talking about segregating the security deposits?
Well, no, you receive 19 units. There's certain things you have to allow, like 6 months for security.
Mm-hmm. Well, if you have multiple properties and multiple trusts, you could set up a management company that you own to collect all the rents, and then you have a security deposit account for all those tenants. So it acts like a property, like a third-party property manager. Does that make sense? You said 19-unit apartment building?
I think it's if you own 19 total units.
Yeah. Well, define ownership.
That's what I was getting at. So if I split out my properties 18 at a time, stay underneath there, and then whether it's
you got to read the code and see what it says. It will see what it defines. You know, common interests and things like that. It may get around it. They may have drafted it poorly. Yes, sir.
So is the solution to have separate trusts for each property and the LLC be the trustee of each?
Close. I'm getting there. Close. I'm getting there. I'm close. You're close. We're getting there. And the third thing is you have no anonymity of ownership, because most people, when you file with the Secretary of State, you put your name all over it. That's a mistake. There's ways to do it completely anonymously. And if I told you that, I'd have to kill you. But I do that for clients. You know, I say, I'm the organizer, registered agent, and filer. So their name's nowhere on the public filing. Some states have very limited information, like Wyoming is one of my favorite. Very little information on there. Okay, other states have lots of information that they want. All right, so, but if you have them in the land trusts are not publicly recorded anywhere that you can look up. It's a P.O. Box trustee at a virtual P.O. Box in another state, different last name than Janet's. Very hard to put together. So, what we would do to layer and segregate is every property titled in a separate trust. And then the beneficiary, the real beneficial owner, would be one or more LLC. So in this case, we have three in one LLC, two, and then three. So if there was an injury on land trust four, they can get property four and five, but they can't get the other ones. Does that make sense? So every property, simple to do, it's a one-time setup, it's really easy. Very easy. Yes. You should be, your role is, so in this case I would set up a property management company with your name all over it. And you work for the property management company. If they look up the owner, they see a trust. There's nowhere to go. And the idea is keeping the lawyers from wanting to take the case because it's muddy and it's messy.
Everybody just knows everybody's
move to another town.
move
to another town. That's all can I tell you. When I do this in California, people say, I don't trust anyone to be a trustee. Well, that's a California problem. You don't trust anybody. Step four, we want to become legally judgment-proof. So the entity that I recommend for pretty darn tight asset protection is a limited family limited partnership. Now, a limited partnership has general partners, and they run things. And limited partners who just put up money or investments. Has anyone ever invested in one of these? Where a general partner was like a developer for a shopping center and you were a limited partner? A few of you. Okay? But you can set it up with a family because it has great asset protection. Usually we'll put a corporation or an LLC, taxed as one, either way, owning 1% as the general partner, and then the husband and wife own the other 99%. Now, who controls if and when distributions of money are made out of that partnership? The general partner. And who owns the corporation? The husband and wife. It requires unanimous consent in my agreement. So let's say, and by the way, you can't get to someone's assets that are in a family limited partnership. You can't even get to their interest that they own and become a voting member. The way it works is you can get what's called a charging order against a member's interest, which means whatever, it's sort of like a wage garnishment, whatever they get, the creditor gets. So let's say there's $1 million in assets and we split it up like this. And let's say it produces $100,000 in annual net income. Now, with partnerships, S-corps, any pass-through, when you make money, you're taxed on it whether you take it out or not. You know that? So whether you take the money out as a distribution or you leave it in to reinvest, you're taxed on the earned money, right? So in this case, if there's $100,000 in annual income, the general partner would have $1,000 in taxable income, and husband and wife, $49,500 in taxable income. And they're taking it out every year, and you know everything's fine. And all of a sudden, a lawsuit comes along, gets a judgment against husband, and attaches their limited partnership interest. Now, what do they get? Do they get the assets in the partnership? No. Do they get voting rights? No. What do they get? Whatever he was getting. Now, who decides if, when, and how much to distribute? The general partner, which requires unanimous consent. He says yes, she says no. No distributions that year, or the next year, or the next year. How much is the creditor getting? Zippity-doo-dah. So what if you need money out? You can pay the wife. Right? There's nothing preventing you from doing that. And here's the thing. If money is earned but not distributed, there's a tax bill. Who's responsible for the taxes on the undistributed income? Well, according to an IRS decision during the Carter administration, the creditor would be entitled to the tax bill on that. The creditor would pay your taxes on your phantom income that they never received. We're running behind. I'll stay and answer questions after. I'll be happy to do that. So, putting it all together, the properties will be titled how? Separate land trusts. And then we're going to break those up into LLCs. And now, the LLCs are owned by what we call a parent company. Think General Motors parent company. Subsidiaries are Chevy, Cadillac, Buick, etc. So these are the subsidiaries, and the parent company that owns them is what? No, a family limited partnership. You don't want to do S Corp for rentals. Bad. You want a partnership for rentals, separate. So this family limited partnership is the parent company that owns the LLCs that are the beneficiaries of the trust. General partner here, limited partners there. How many people have a living trust? You plug it in right here. Instead of the limiting partners being the individuals, what would it be? Their living trust. So what are you passing to your heirs? The keys to the parent entity and everything that flows from it. This is pretty darn tight. This is really tough to get. This is like lawyer repellent. Now, I'll answer your questions in a minute. The average fee is to set something like this up between $8,000 and $12,000, depending on how many properties you have and so forth, and how many entities and what state. You know, there's some variables there. And it's you know, like the Meineke muffler man said, you can pay me now or you can pay me later. It's only a one-time thing. It's just the annual filing fees for the entities, which isn't that much to maintain these things. But how many people can fill in forms? Not that hard. Okay, so I have my bulletproof asset protection system, which gives you free updates for life. There are 4 volumes to the program that cover everything I have discussed, including but not limited to the family limited partnership agreement, and attorneys charge $5,000 to $15,000 just for that. That's crazy. I think that's robbery. I only charge $4,000 for that. But $15,000, that's crazy. Plus, if you have a single member LLC or husband and wife disregard it and you're doing earned income, it'll give you the forms and the instructions to convert that in January to an S-Corp LLC. So everything is in there, all the forms, state-specific, manuals, forms, checklists, videos. I just updated it like 2 weeks ago, the forms and the manuals. In addition to that, I recorded a two-day intensive asset protection boot camp, which is included in this. The videos are all on that. Now, the program is $19.97. How many people would like this for free, by the way? I thought so. You can pay me now, or you can pay me later. If I give it to you for free, you won't do anything. You'll let it collect dust. I promise you won't do it. If you pay for it, you'll do it. And you should, because remember what happened to me? And I got lazy, and look what happened to me. So, you need this system. The price is $19.95. You want to pay zero, and I'll do the all-American thing and divide it by two, and it's just $9.97 today. Super. Now, here's the thing. You're going to get it on a memory stick, everything you need, plus, the only reason is because you have to walk out with something in your hand. But reality is, I have it online, and you're going to get a login, and you get free updates for life. Because every time I update, I do a new form, I have it in my Dropbox, and it's synced to the cloud. So when I put a new form or I update a form, I update it in the cloud, which you have access to. When I do a new boot camp and I record the video every couple of years, you get an update for life. Your life, not mine. What? Editable, yeah, Microsoft Word. Yeah, Microsoft Word forms, and we have state-specific stuff, and I have charts and diagrams for each and every state. In addition to that, if you bring it to your local lawyer because you're not sure what to do, it's going to cost you an arm and a leg because he doesn't know my forms. So this is what I'm going to do for you. I am going to, for the first 10 people, I'm going to offer you a one-on-one Zoom consultation. So you go through the stuff, sketch up a diagram of how you think it should look, and then we'll get on Zoom, and I'll explain to you why that's all wrong, and this is the way you should do it. And, you know, we'll take into consideration, because there's no cookie cutter for everybody. Everybody's a little different. So we'll take into consideration your federal tax issues, the practical issues, and I'll recommend a plan that will work for your particular situation. Getting sued is not fun. Has anyone ever had their car broken into? You remember that feeling, disgusting feeling? Someone robbed your car? Well, imagine a lawsuit that goes on for years, emotionally draining. It's like going to an ATM machine, turning around and seeing this. It's like you're being robbed. It's a terrible feeling. And I've been sued. I'll be admitted. I've been sued, and I hired lawyers. I'm not stupid. And I've spent a lot of money on lawyer fees, hundreds of thousands of dollars, and won. Did I really win? No, I didn't really win. One more question, then we'll wrap it up.
Yeah, you mentioned Wyoming.
Yeah. I'll give you the lawyer answer. It depends. I like Wyoming for the parent company, but for the sub-LLC subsidiaries, it depends on a lot of factors, like where your real estate is and how much you have of it. So the Zoom is for that. You know, you'll get a good idea from the program. You'll have all the forms, the instructions, the checklists, everything. It's the same forms I use in my practice. If you want to pay me to do it, I'd be happy to charge you 18 to 15 grand. That's fine. I'm not doing it anyway. My paralegal does most of it. Yeah, you can do all the filings, all the instructions, everything's in there, and it's self-contained, like, and it's updated, you know, all the time. So you get free updates for life, your life. I made a deal with God. So as I said, if I do the right thing, you'll let me live as long as Moses. So I'm going to 120, as long as I behave myself. Three frogs are sitting on a log. Two decide to jump off. How many are left? Who said that? Three. Why? They just decided. So if you decided you want to do something about this and set yourself up for protection, get off the log and do it. get the program. First 10 people get the free Zoom. I can't do it for everyone. There's only so many hours in the day. So do it now. Do it now. Don't remember, how many people remember what happened to me? I'm a bad example. But I shared that with you so to give you an example of how easy it is to get caught up in life and not do what you need to do until the shark swims up and bites you in the backside. You know, and thank God that one only cost me 10 grand because it could have cost me a lot of money. All right. Thank you for being here today. I appreciate it. May I, before I let you go and go to the back and get the program, may I say a prayer of you? Will that be okay? It's from the Torah. I'm a Jew. But everybody needs a good Christian pastor and a good Jewish lawyer. You know, Jews and Christians aren't that far apart. You both pray to God. It's just that Jews pray to God and Christians pray through Jesus. So Jews get everything wholesale. From the book of Numbers. May God bless and keep you. May he turn his face towards you and be gracious to you. May he lift his countenance upon you and give you peace. And protection. And protection. Thank you very much. God bless.